The reactions we've just described have taken place in the matrix of the mitochondria, that is, within both sets of the membranes. The reactions will have produced the reduced cofactor, NADH, and because this is a water-soluble molecule, it can diffuse throughout the matrix compartment and finally approach the components of the inner mitochondrial membrane. Embedded within this membrane are various protein complexes together with redox molecules, which are capable of accepting or donating electrons and hydrogens. The NADH passes its hydrogens to the first of these complexes, that's shown as the grey structure in the diagram, and in doing so the NADH is reoxidized back to NAD. This means that the limited amount of these cofactors within the cell has been regenerated to its oxidized form and can take part in further reactions in the TCA cycle. From that first complex in the membrane, pairs of hydrogens are then passed on to a shuttle molecule, which takes those hydrogens onto a later complex within the membrane, and that in turn becomes reduced. Then another shuttle molecule takes the electrons from that complex and passes them on to the last of these complexes, which becomes reduced. Finally, at this last complex, which contains a cytochrome which is capable of reacting with oxygen gas, the hydrogens and electrons are passed on to oxygen, which then becomes reduced to form water, which is a waste product. As each of the pairs of hydrogens and their bond electrons are passed from one redox carrier in the membrane to the next one, there is a certain amount of free energy released because most oxidation reactions are exergonic. As the electrons and hydrogens are passed horizontally through these complexes in the membrane, the energy can be conserved by changes in the folding of the protein or the positions of the proteins, and this, we'll see, is going to result in processes that trap that energy and eventually convert it in the synthesis of ATP. So two processes are going on. Pairs of hydrogen atoms are transferred horizontally through the complexes within the membrane and are finally transferred to oxygen gas to form water. But as these horizontal processes are going on, the energy that occurs during a redox reaction is used to cause a change in the shape or folding of these protein complexes, and we'll see in a later lecture in more detail that this is going to result in a physical process, the use of these proteins in the membrane to transport protons, hydrogen ions, across the membrane from the matrix side to the top of the diagram, which represents the intermitochondrial space. And this pumping of hydrogen ions from one compartment of the cell to the space between the two mitochondrial membranes is going to result in something called a proton gradient being generated. And this, we'll see in more detail in a later lecture, is then used to drive a motor protein which will have the properties of synthesizing ATP from ADP. And this is what we'll call energy trapping or energy conservation. We're now in a position to look at the total energy yields during these processes. If we look back at the TCA cycle, we could see that there were three enzyme reactions that were based on NAD as cofactor, and these produce NADH and a proton. There was one enzyme reaction that was based on a flavin cofactor, and that produced FADH2. And there was one enzyme reaction that produced GTP, which is equivalent to an ATP molecule in terms of its internal energy. Now, it's generally accepted, or it was for several decades, that the reoxidation of NADH resulted in three ATP molecules being produced for each pair of hydrogens transferred from the cofactor to oxygen. So if we look at the summary of the ATP yields, we can say that those three enzyme reactions involving NADH will each produce three ATP molecules. That gives a total of nine. One enzyme step was based on a flavin cofactor, and it's accepted that the reoxidation of FADH2 results in a lower yield of ATP, and it was accepted that the value of 2 ATP was representative of that reaction. Then finally we can add in the 1 GTP, which is equivalent to a single ATP. The total of those therefore gives us 12 ATPs, and for several decades that was accepted as the ATP yield of 12 from one turn of the TCA cycle. In recent years, rather more careful measurements of oxidizing reactions in mitochondria have downsized the yield of ATP, and these new figures are shown in red. So that the reoxidation of NADH is thought now to generate only about 2.5 molecules of ATP. And so we can write in red three of those reactions would result in 2.5 ATP molecules. The flavin-based cofactor FADH2, when that's reoxidized, is thought to yield a value of about 1.5 ATP molecules. So including the new numbers in the table, we now get a slightly lower yield of ATP, 10 ATP molecules per turn of the TCA cycle, and more recent textbooks would reflect those newer values. We highlighted, as we discussed the individual reactions of the pathway, that certain enzyme steps were highly exergonic and they would be irreversible within the conditions in the cell. It's worth just reiterating these at this point. The reaction catalyzed by citrate synthetase is irreversible, and the reactions catalyzed by isocitrate dehydrogenase and ketoglutarate dehydrogenase are also irreversible, in most part due to the fact that carbon dioxide gas is produced and released, and as this diffuses through a cell, this will contribute to a high entropy contribution to the reaction. So these are irreversible, and these helped to make sure that the pathway continues to work in a degradative or a catabolic direction. It has been found that the enzymes that catalyze irreversible steps within the pathway are also the enzymes that show allosteric properties and have binding sites for cofactors and other intermediates of the pathway. If we look at these in turn, isocitrate dehydrogenase has binding sites for ADP and NADH. ADP can be considered a low-energy cofactor, and it's found that when this binds to the enzyme, it activates it and increases the flux of components through the whole pathway. NADH can be considered a high-energy cofactor, and when this binds to the enzyme at its specific site, this inhibits the enzyme and therefore slows down the flux of molecules through the pathway. The next enzyme, ketoglutarate dehydrogenase, has two allosteric binding sites. Again, the high-energy cofactor NADH has an inhibitory effect, and also the immediate product of the reaction, succinyl-CoA, has an inhibitory effect when it binds to a totally separate site on the enzyme. There is some controversy about the enzyme citrate synthase and its allosteric properties. The isolated enzyme can be shown to have allosteric properties and has binding sites for NADH and also succinyl-CoA, and both these substances are shown to have inhibitory effects on the enzyme when the enzyme is studied in isolation. However, within the conditions in the cell, it's believed that these allosteric effects are of relatively minor importance, and instead it's thought that the activity of the enzyme citrate synthase, the first enzyme of this pathway, is rather more influenced by the concentration of oxaloacetate within the cell. So when the levels of this are high, then citrate synthetase reaction can proceed at a fairly rapid rate. So far, we've emphasized the energy trapping or energy conservation functions of the pathway and summarized the ATP yields from the reduced cofactors. But in certain tissues like liver, and to a certain extent also in kidney, the intermediates of this pathway can also be used for biosynthetic reactions in order to produce intermediates that are used for other processes in the cell. This diagram shows two of these important processes. Towards the top left of the diagram can be seen the fact that oxaloacetate can be withdrawn from the pathway, and by a process of transamination, the oxaloacetate, which is a keto acid, can be transaminated to produce the amino acid aspartate. Aspartate is an important precursor. It's used in the synthesis of purine and pyrimidine molecules, which are the building blocks for the synthesis of nucleic acids like DNA and RNA. A similar process occurs with ketoglutarate, shown at the bottom left of the diagram. Ketoglutarate, or oxoglutarate, is a keto acid, and the carbon skeleton of this molecule can be transaminated, first of all to produce glutamate, and that can then undergo a further addition of an amino group to produce the amino acid glutamine. Glutamine is very important in the synthesis of purines and other nitrogen-containing molecules within the cell. Oxaloacetate can also be converted into phosphoenolpyruvate, shown on the left there in blue, by a very important enzyme called PEP carboxylase, standing for phosphoenolpyruvate carboxylase. This is a very important reaction because it means that it bypasses the last irreversible step of glycolysis and allows intermediates of the TCA cycle to be converted to phosphoenolpyruvate, which can then be used to form glucose. This process is known as gluconeogenesis, the use of other intermediates within the cell to synthesize glucose that can then be used to maintain the blood sugar level during conditions like fasting and starvation. This means, in overall summary, that any amino acid that's come from the breakdown of proteins, particularly muscle proteins, if the carbon skeletons of these amino acids can be metabolized through the TCA cycle, then finally the oxaloacetate that's produced as the last intermediate of this pathway can be converted to phosphoenolpyruvate, and then this can be used for the synthesis of glucose. In tissues such as liver, the TCA cycle can also be an important source of carbon atoms for the synthesis of fats. And this is because citrate, the first intermediate of this pathway, can be transported out of mitochondria into the cytosolic compartment of cells, particularly in liver tissue. And there it is broken down to form acetyl-CoA, the two-carbon unit, which is then used for the synthesis of both long-chain fatty acids and also for important sterol-like molecules like cholesterol and the steroid hormones. The withdrawal of intermediates from the TCA cycle could result in a lower rate of flux of molecules through this pathway. Therefore, there needs to be a certain amount of topping up or anaplerotic reactions in which a constant level of these intermediates can be maintained by the use of other molecules. Here in this diagram, we can see the reaction catalyzed by an enzyme known as the malic enzyme or the malate enzyme, in which pyruvate, which is the end product of glycolysis and therefore those usually adequate amounts of this intermediate, pyruvate can be converted into malate by the malic enzyme, and this is one way that the intermediates of the TCA cycle can be kept at a really constant level. This diagram summarizes the various biosynthetic functions of the TCA cycle. And there is one other reaction that we should emphasize, which is that the oxaloacetate, the very important intermediate needed for the first reaction of the pathway, that can also be topped up to maintain a constant level by a reaction shown towards the top of the diagram in which pyruvate, which has come from the end product of glycolysis, pyruvate can be converted to oxaloacetate by an important enzyme shown here as pyruvate carboxylase. This is an example of a reaction which carbon dioxide is added onto a molecule for a biosynthetic reaction, and this type of carboxylation reaction uses the cofactor biotin for that type of process.